Oh, sorry.
Broadcasting.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue to order. And we will be going a little bit out of sequence today because we had an unexpected development on Senate Bill 164. It's going to Ways and Means wants to take a look at it. So we're waiting for a light fiscal on that. So we will start with our public hearings, and I will open a public hearing on, we'll take the roll first. Getting ahead of myself again. Excuse me? Uh-oh.
We're all just telling you you need to do the roll.
Yeah. There you go. It's been a long day, so please call the roll.
Senator Finley.
Finley present by video.
Senator Riley.
Present by video.
Senator Wagner.
Wagner's present by video.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Boquist present on audio.
Madam Chair Burdick.
Present by video. Okay, now I will not get ahead of myself. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2330.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is the BAC Legislative Revenue Office. So we have House Bill 2330. I thought a couple of background information would be helpful. So first, some school districts that house foreign exchange students in dormitories are eligible for receiving formula revenue because these students are considered resident students of the school districts for the purpose of distributing state school fund. So currently, five school districts are receiving such revenue for about 40 students. And then second, the small school district grants of $2.5 million per school year, that's part of carve-outs from the state school fund, they are designed to provide some additional operating revenues to districts with statutorily defined small high schools. And currently, there are about 80 school districts that qualify these grants. A little change here is this bill also increases the weighted average daily membership, so-called ADMW cap of a school district with eligible small high schools from 8,500 to 9,500 to qualify for small school district grants. So this is at a district level grant. Small school districts grants are commonly called small high school grants. The governing laws on small school district grants and school district funding for foreign exchange students are scheduled to sunset on June 30, 2021. This bill removes the sunset, making this funding permanent. Technically, this bill repeals the repeal, thereby making the sunset go away. That's all I have, Madam Chair.
Dave, when did the sunset initially be put in to this program?
It was a small school district grant. The extension was granted last year's special session. Only for 1 year. Now, before that, small school grant actually started. The last time it was extended was 2015, and it's been there for over two decades, as far as I know. And then foreign exchange student funding started in 2021-12. And the statutory cap for this funding for foreign exchange student as resident student is capped at 47 students. That's the level of 2010 and 11 level.
Okay, we'll move to our witness list. Thank you. Michael Carter, followed by Morgan Allen.
Good Thank you, Madam Chairman, and thank you, Senate Finance Committee. We appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'm Michael Carter. I'm currently superintendent of the Lake County School District Number 7. I'm also the executive director of the Oregon Small School Association. Our association has, you know, about 119 members, and most of our districts, as all, most of you know, are small. So this bill has been back and forth for many years, and we appreciate over the years that the, you know, the legislature has funded it. Right now, we'd like to get that sunsetted so we never have to argue about it again and keep lobbying for it. This is a great opportunity to keep small districts intact. If this is not passed, we will actually lose funding, you know, the programs, and we have some things that the impact is huge, and it's not money. You know, my mom and dad, they're money in front of that much money. But I just want to make sure that you understand that the impact here is huge. We support this. The Oregon Small School Association supports this bill greatly. And the five districts that have the foreign exchange students, that is part of their culture and history, and it makes a major difference for them and their communities. Every student in Oregon deserves the best possible education, no matter if they attend school in Portland or the Lake County School District or other small school districts throughout the state. So we appreciate your opportunity to bring this to your attention, and we ask that you finally put this to bed and sunset it and pass it. And we thank you very much for the opportunity. Do you have any questions for me?
Yes, the sunset last year was only for a year. Can you say why it was such a short period of time?
We believe it would have been done last year, but COVID hit. I mean, everyone, bipartisan support's been there all the way around. The only addition that we have from last time is that we need to move that cap, you know, to help out our Klamath Falls County, to move that from 85 to 9,500, because there's four small high schools and other schools in that county that, you know, just as rural as some of the rest of us out here. So yes, madam, that particular bill has been up multiple times, and we're hoping that this time we can get it funded and we can move on.
Before, when you were going from sunset to sunset, how long were those sunsets?
Usually a year, and we had a couple that were two, usually a biennium.
Okay. And it started in 2012, the program did?
Some of them were longer than that, ma'am. The one was actually longer than that, but the others, the dormitory schools came in, I think, in that particular period.
Got it. Okay. Other questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you. We'll move to Morgan Allen, followed by Lou Lyon.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. Morgan Allen here on behalf of COSA. But I also have the rare opportunity to say that I've been deputized by OEA, OSEA, and the School Boards Association to share that all of us are in support of this bill. It passed the House 56-1. And as Mr. Beck said, this impacts five school districts, Mitchell, Spray, Ukiah, Burnt River, and Paisley, who have dormitories and have foreign exchange students visiting the districts, and then about 80 school districts divvy up $5 million a biennium. So, as it was said, it's not a ton of money, but it is important funds for these smaller districts and these smaller high schools, which still are required to provide the type of comprehensive supports that our larger school districts have. And that's really what I think the origin of this funding was for, to recognize that we don't have the economies of scale in some of our small school districts. We have had multiple sunset extensions, and I think last February, we had this similar bill in the February 2020 session that would have made this permanent, and it, I believe, would have passed in that session if not for circumstances of that session. So this has broad bipartisan support, and we think it's really appropriate that we should not have to ask our small schools to come back every biennium or so and ask the legislature to extend the sunset. It has always been extended on large bipartisan majorities, and we would urge you to pass this bill like your House colleagues did. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Questions from the committee. Senator Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Morgan, I have a quick question. When you say there are five dormitory districts in the state, and you rattled them off, I have three in my district, and they're not included on the ones you rattled off. So is there a different class of dormitory district, or just how does that work?
Yeah, so great question, Senator Finley. So the dormitory districts that are eligible to do the to have foreign exchange students. They were essentially grandfathered in. I can't remember exactly what session. I want to say it was either the 2011 or 2013 session that these five dormitories were grandfathered in and allowed to keep having foreign exchange students and claiming state school fund for them at their current levels of, I believe, the 2010-2011 school year. Mr. Beck can correct me if I'm wrong, but that was a compromise. There was, in a couple of legislative sessions about a decade ago, there was some consternation about school districts bringing in foreign exchange students, school districts not allowing students not to graduate after 4 years of high school and keeping them for a fifth year and allowing them to go to community college on the state school fund. So it was kind of part of some discussions, you know, in the last 8 to 10 years. And this was a compromise to basically grandfather in those five school districts to allow them to claim foreign exchange students in the dormitories. That is my understanding, Senator Finley. And Mr. Becker or Mr. Carter might be able to correct me if I'm wrong.
That's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions from the committee? Senator Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, again, there must have been some reason back in 2013 why we didn't let every small school do this, and we said, okay, we're going to stop this, but we're going to grandfather these five schools. I'd like to know more about what the discussion was. Those are the 2 years I wasn't here, and so I missed that discussion. I'd like to, and probably staff or Senator Boquist could probably fill me in on that.
Senator Boquist?
Delighted. Yeah, I think I've heard this bill, I don't know how many times. At the time, the five school districts that were there, that are presently there, had existing foreign exchange students at them. That was confirmed during those discussions back then. It was also during the discussion period, you remember when we were actually trimming stuff and there were concerns that we really didn't want, for financial reasons, to expand, even though there was much merit to the five that already existed. And so the grandfathering in came to, well, we don't want to punish school districts that have, especially, and the poster child was Ukiah, okay? Because I mean, we spent a lot of time talking about Ukiah back then. And so they were all grandfathered in, but we didn't want growth to go out. At the same time, some of you will recall, and you weren't here at the time, Senator Riley, we were having some issues with a couple of ESDs supporting the small schools out of the eastern side, and they seemed to be making the 6 o'clock news on a regular basis, which again put consternation to the committee at that time of, you know, what are we doing next if they can afford airplanes and things like that. And so that is really how we came to the deal of those that had them existing at that time and could confirm it. We said, yeah, put those in. And those that did not, because of fiscal constraints coming out of the 2008-2009 biennium in which we were in financial trouble, we simply made a budget decision flat out. It wasn't the value. I mean, the value in all these dormitory schools having foreign students is, you know, exceptional. But it was purely a financial decision made at that time and in light of some of the problems we're having with ESDs.
I see a lot of nodding heads that confirm what you just said, Senator Boquist. Thank you for that piece of history.
Thank you. I didn't need nodding heads. I've worked with Senator Boquist enough to know that if he tells me it is true.
Well, it's his extraordinary memory that impresses me. So, okay. Other questions from the committee? All right. We will move to Lou Lyon.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the State Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. As superintendent and spokesperson of Burnt River School District 32.
Wait. Can you identify yourself, please?
I apologize. My name is Lou Lyon. Apologies. As superintendent and spokesperson of Burnt River School District 30J, I thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of House Bill 2330. On behalf of our school district and community of Unity, Oregon, we urge your support of the bill. Our district is unique in terms of what this proposed legislation means to our high school. We rely heavily on revenue provided through this legislation, and loss of that revenue may very well be the death knell for our high school. If the proposed legislation does not pass, we will be forced to eliminate at least two of our three high school teachers and many co-curricular and extracurricular activities, thereby leaving our five local high school students to make the choice of continuing in an online education program without traditional Burnt River School District activities, or travel 45 to 48 miles one way twice per day to a neighboring community to continue their education. If those students travel to another district, we will not need a high school teacher at all, so all three positions will be eliminated. Burnt River School District is unique in that our small district has hosted, on average, 10 foreign exchange students per year for the past decade, with the exception, of course, of our COVID-19 pandemic year. This does wonders to increase the multiculturalism in our small community. I have witnessed our local students develop deep levels of friendship and respect with our visiting students. Over the years, Burnt River School District has experienced diminished enrollment, which presents a challenge of epic proportion for our school. If we lose our high school, we lose the amazing benefits that our students, both local and foreign, and our community realize because of the programs that would be funded through HVIL 2330. It is for these reasons that I ask you to share our story with your colleagues and seek their support in passing this critical legislation. It is truly an imperative for our students, our school, and our community. Thank you very much for your consideration of this matter.
And thank you, and I'm glad you didn't have to drive here, because I'm sure it was a long way, as Senator Finley, I'm sure, can vouch for it. But as a fourth generation Oregonian, I must admit I don't know exactly where Burnt River School District is. Can you give us some landmarks?
Yes. Are you familiar with John Day, Oregon, which is
absolutely
also— Okay, we are approximately halfway between John Day, Oregon, and Ontario.
Oh, okay, all right. So
we are in a high mountain valley that is beautiful, juxtaposed and surrounded by three mountain passes. So when we say 45 to 48 miles one way, these are over mountain passes for our kids.
Wow. Well, I think the committee, in order to take final action on this bill, needs to take a field trip.
Wonderful. Please come on by.
Okay. Thank you so much. Are there questions? Senator Briley liked that suggestion. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Finley.
Madam Chair, I would be derelict in my duties if I didn't give a shout out to Burnt River School System. I am in my office if anyone ever feels like coming by. I received a photo from the Burnt River School District about 2 months ago. I have it on my wall in my office. It shows their class and some of their facilities. It's an incredible place. I mean, and I would love to host any and all of you to come to Eastern Oregon, to Senate District 30, and I will show you the Burnt River School District.
That's wonderful. I accept on behalf of the entire committee. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Pardon?
Thank you.
Okay. That finishes our witness list on House Bill 2330. So we will close the public hearing and open a public hearing on House Bill 3138.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3138A just simply extends the time for filing of estate tax returns to 12 months. It is currently set in statute at 9 months for those who don't have to file a federal tax return. This would make the 12 months for all estate tax filers.
This is for the estate tax only, right?
Absolutely correct. So it would be after the death of the decedent, and then the estate would file the estate tax return.
Okay. So we will start. Is Representative Noble here?
I am, Chair. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, and members of the committee. My name is Ron Noble. I'm the state representative for House District 24. And this bill came to my office in 2019. It was introduced as House Bill 3197. Unfortunately, after passing the House and the way the session ended, it died in committee in 2019 in the Senate. So we're reintroducing this bill this session. And as was stated, the bill simply extends time for the filing of estate tax as applicable to a state owing no federal estate tax. It creates new provisions to allow 12 months instead of 9 months for a return to be filed and the tax paid to the Department of Revenue following the death of a decedent. I'm sure, as you may know, grieving families need more time than the existing 9 months often to get their affairs in order, and often with complex tax issues. And this bill affords a little bit more time needed to comply with the applicable laws. We've worked with the Department of Revenue. This is a combination of their input as well, and they provided the appropriate verbiage in front of you today to ensure we can move this bill forward. I believe I've got my constituent on the list to testify as well, Linda O'Hara, and with that, I would offer any questions or let the smarter people in the room answer them.
Okay, thank you. And I gather, maybe this is a question for Jamie, I gather the deadline for filing a federal return is 9 months for people who need to file one. Is that correct?
That's correct, Chair Burdick.
Okay. All right. Questions? I see no questions. So we will move to Representative Noble's constituent, Linda O'Hara. And if you could introduce yourself for the record, we would appreciate it. I think you're here.
You can hear me, yes?
We can hear you.
Okay, thank you. Technology, you never know. My name is Linda O'Hara. I'm a resident of McMinnville. As Representative Noble says, I'm in his district. In April of 2015, my family and I experienced the death of my sister. And when I say we and the challenges we had, that's what I mean, it's my family. Unfortunately, she had no will. She died with assets without a will. And getting a personal representative approved by the court in a timely manner was an issue. That's something that we all don't have control of. Also, advice from some professionals that we received was not accurate. So what we can control and what House Bill 3138 does and what I'm asking you to do today is to see this forward so that the deadline for filing the taxes is extended from 9 months to 12 months after the death of the person in question. Those 3 extra months would have made all the difference to us at the time, and I would like it so that other families don't have to go through what we did. And it's a very simple thing, and it makes sense to do it. So I thank you for your time. I really appreciate your consideration in putting this through.
Thank you, and I'm sorry for the loss of your sister. Are there questions from the committee? I see no questions, so thank you very much. And that concludes our witness list. So we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3138. And now we will move to our work session if we have the necessary paperwork. Do we, Chris?
Not yet, Madam Chair. So we can move forward and you can hear it and we can stand at ease and we can stand at ease now and place a call in to LFO to check. Just for some context, your next potential meeting is next week, is next Wednesday. So there's the clock issue, so to speak.
Yeah, I want to get this done today. And we do have some explanation that we have to give on the -12 amendment to Senate Bill 164. So let's go ahead and open the work session on Senate Bill 164.
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, this is Caitlin Harger with the Legislative Revenue Office. Senate Bill 164 has the Dash 12 amendments that you've seen in OLIS. I also put in OLIS a section by section description that just talks about the major concepts in the bill. And I will quickly maybe share my screen to facilitate all of you seeing that. Let's see, are you able to see that okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. So this is a little bit less detailed than the section by section description I put up last time, but it provides all the different changes by concept and where they are in the bill. And then I do have a minimal revenue impact that talks specifically about the provisions in the bill that affect revenue. And so I'm happy to go through that in depth if you'd like.
Yeah, why don't you explain it since we have some time here?
Okay. So there are three components to this minimal revenue impact. I'm going to talk about them separately, but the first is fiscal year filing. And so the first change that's made as part of the Dash 12 and as part of the amendments you saw during the last committee hearing, it changes the cap from a calendar year filing system to a fiscal year filing system. And we heard some testimony from stakeholders who file on a fiscal year basis that is different from the calendar year, that this is really burdensome without that fiscal year option. So the first major change is to allow for fiscal year filing. And we don't think this will change the overall revenue. It just might shift the timing of revenue as those returns come in on a different filing timeline than calendar year filers. So that's the first piece. Okay, and then the second piece is the grocery outlet adjustment. So we heard some testimony from grocery outlets specifically in the committee about having a unique business model that makes it difficult for, or makes it, they have a unique business model that prevents them from taking the grocery exclusion that is present in the cap. So for grocery outlet, at the corporate level, they are selling groceries. And at the store level, they have what's called an independent operator. And the independent operator is facilitating the sale of those groceries, but never actually takes ownership. So grocery outlet asked for they spoke with DOR and they said they would like a legislative fix related to this. And so in the bill, the language is adjusted to allow for groceries sold on consignment in the case of grocery outlet to be part of that grocery exemption. And it only applies to the groceries they sell, just like the grocery exemption that's already in place. So the other goods they might sell in the store would not be subject to that exemption. And so for that piece, because it's an individual taxpayer or a specific company, using tax return data is not possible due to disclosure issues. I was able to find some publicly available data in the Wall Street Journal that talked about their sales, grocery outlets, national sales in 2019, which were about $2.5 billion. And then I was able to share that down to Oregon and make some assumptions based on the CAT subtractions and the CAT rate. And I believe that this is going to amount to a minimal revenue loss, less than $50,000 on an annual basis. So that's the grocery outlet overview. And then the last piece is a change to the retaliatory tax provision. So under current law, both Oregon-based insurers and foreign and alien insurers are required to pay the CAT. And anytime Oregon increases taxes on insurers operating within the state, we see this retaliatory effect in other states where Oregon insurers operate. So I believe there's some testimony to the committee and in different sessions talking about how if there's an Oregon company and they operate in all other states, when Oregon increases taxes, like the CAT, for example, the Oregon company gets a retaliatory tax hit in every other state in which they operate. So this fix is designed to try to avoid that issue for Oregon-based companies. And what it does is it exempts foreign and alien insurers that are subject to the retaliatory tax from the cap. And so this, we again do not believe, is going to cause a revenue decline, and it's due to some specific mechanisms within the way the statutes work. So under current law, foreign and alien insurance companies are paying into the CAT. So the CAT fund, I'll say, increases because they're getting that revenue. But we're getting less retaliatory tax revenue from those same companies because there's less of a gap between our taxes and theirs. Now, under this change, foreign and alien insurers do not pay into the CAT, but we also don't see that revenue loss. So it's not changing the overall revenue. Also, one of the provisions in statute currently says that at the end of each biennium, the Fund for Student Success, or the CAT fund, needs to transfer, basically to backfill, any decrease to the general fund that's due to the administration of the CAT. So the retaliatory tax decline that we'd see currently would be backfilled by the CAT. So kind of in both cases, the money coming from foreign insurers or not coming from foreign insurers doesn't actually stay in the Fund for Student Success. So there's some mechanics at work here that mean that this is likely to have no revenue impact for that provision. And of course, I'm happy to answer any questions, but those are the three main categories that have revenue, potential revenue effects.
Okay, and then the auto dealer provision as well. Could you just describe that briefly?
Sure. So there are two changes to vehicle-related statutes. I think the one that you're referring to, Chair, is the exchange of new vehicles between franchised dealerships. So the change in the bill allows for the new vehicles to be transferred between franchise dealerships without the requirement that the customer requests it, whereas under current law, the customer would have to request this. This is in line with the original intent of the bill, and so there's no revenue impact here because this was already built into the estimates. This is more of a clarification or a technical change to clarify the original intent. And then the second car piece is allowing leased vehicles to collect the CAT as well, not just sold vehicles.
Allows what?
The second vehicle-related change allows sales of leased vehicles to collect the estimated CAT from customers, whereas before it was only if you sold the vehicle could you collect the estimated tax, and again, that's in line with the original intent. So now if it's just being leased, you can still collect the CAT from your estimated CAT from the customer.
Okay. All right. Any questions from the committee? That was an excellent summary. Thank you, Caitlin. Any questions from the committee? How's our paperwork coming, Chris?
I just got a heads up. It should be in just another couple minutes. So if you'd like to stand at ease and just wait a couple minutes. I got notice a couple minutes ago that it would be 3 to 4 minutes.
Okay. Well, let's stand at ease for 3 minutes. And we will see you back here in 3 minutes.
Meeting resumed.
Thank you. We will reconvene the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. And we now have a light fiscal report on Senate Bill 164. So, Caitlin, do you want to just summarize that?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the light statement just came in from fiscal, and it looks like it's anticipated to have an impact on both the Department of Revenue and the Oregon Judicial Department. And so it has a subsequent referral, I believe, to Ways and Means now, like you announced at the beginning of the meeting.
Okay, and it's my understanding that what's causing the fiscal is the change in the tax reporting period. Is that correct?
I believe so. That's what we've heard from the department.
Okay. Chris, did you want to add something?
No, that's my current understanding. Yeah.
Okay.
Because there's a short year form, they have to change their process, and there could be some programming, mm-hmm. new tax forms, that kind of thing.
Okay, great. So now I think we're ready for a motion. Let's see what Senator Boquist can come up with here. We've got a dash 12 amendment.
I knew that, ma'am. Madam Chair, I move the A-12 amendment dated 5/25/21 into the main bill SB-164.
Senator Boquist has moved the dash 12 amendment into Senate Bill 164. Is there discussion? Okay, would you call the roll, please, Doug?
Senator Finley.
Senator Finley votes aye.
Senator Riley.
Votes aye.
Senator Wagner.
Wagner votes aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Boquist, aye.
Madam Chair Burdick.
Burdick votes aye. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, ma'am. I move Senate Bill 164 as amended by the A-12 to the floor with the due pass with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Boquist has moved the Senate Bill 164 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion? I see no discussion. Doug, will you please call the roll?
Senator Finley.
Finley votes aye.
Senator Riley.
Votes aye.
Senator Wagner.
Wagner votes aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Boquist aye.
Madam Chair Burdick.
Burdick votes aye. Thank you, committee. And that completes our work for today. Chris, do we have anything else? Oh, yeah, we have bad news about next week. So why don't you break the news now?
Okay. So the Senate Finance and Revenue, because we're going into June and to accommodate floor session, Senate Finance and Revenue schedule will now just be on Mondays and Wednesdays from 1 to 2:45. And then JTAX, as opposed to what we said last night, will be meeting Thursday evenings, 5:30 to 7 at the call of the chair, and have a regular time slot on Fridays at 3:15 to 5. So your next meeting will be next Wednesday, because Monday is Memorial Day.
And we'll have a pretty packed agenda on Wednesday, because we had to combine a couple of days of hearings. So the days of light schedules on Senate Finance and Revenue are pretty much over, but we don't have much longer to go. Senator Boquist, do you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair. I just asked that Corinne resend out the new invite schedule for the new schedule for both the main committee, the joint, and JTAX, so it pops up in the right places on our calendars and we can log back in.
Excellent. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, Corinne, I assume you can do that soon.
We can do that, Madam Chair. I think she's doing some stuff behind the scenes right now, but yes, we will handle that. Yes.
All right. Okay. Thank you, committee, and we are adjourned.